San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB Studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're here not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. If you download the app for 760 KFMB, you can hear us on any device you own. And these all these podcasts are on iymoney.com, commercial free. And we are free on iTunes if you search the title of the show. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a best-selling author. He's a lecturer. He's a philanthropist. He is a family office expert advising several high net worth families, all around good guy, Richard Muzio. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Joe. How was your Christmas?
Well, it was very nice and quiet, and I'm glad you asked.
Mine was good. I always get new underwear and socks, which is what I desperately need by the end of any given year.
Guess what I got?
Time to shop.
I got a space heater.
Good. Heat up your space.
You know this. You know what? Those little things are great. You don't have to, you know, turn on all the heat all over, and it's a good idea. A little oscillating space heater.
Cool.
But anyway, yeah. One thing.
It's hard to say. Oscillating space heater.
Hey, just a consumer alert. You know, the other day I was shopping from Sriracha. Some friend told me I should get the authentic one because I was getting this other one at the other store. Well, next to that bottle was this little chili garlic sauce, and I said, you know, there's not as much sugar in this one. Let me get this. Use that very sparingly, folks. Oh, my God. You
know, you're Italian. You're supposed to handle spicy.
Oh, No. But anyway, if you need to lose weight, you know, that's one way to do it. But take up jogging instead. So anyway, with that.
We got two guests, so let's let it rip, so to speak.
Okay, why not? Well, the first guest we have today is a pretty well-known consultant. He's an entrepreneur, a speaker, an author. He's a coach. He lives in Carlsbad, and his name is Larry Kesslen. Larry, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Joe. Great to be here.
Yeah. And by the way, Joe, I should mention, Larry came through Courtney Lover, our great website maintainer with PopX Graphics.
Absolutely. I think she works on Larry's website for that matter.
Yes,
she does. So, cool.
So outstanding. Well, Larry, we've got your book, Success Redefined. Your website is what again?
SuccessRedefined.com is my business website, and my personal blog is at LarryKesslen.com.
KESSLIN. So, yes, well, sir. Great. Well, tell us about yourself. Where were you born and raised, and how did you find your way to San Diego? Maybe give us a little bit of your educational and professional background.
Born in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Long time ago, just turned 52 in September. So
that's young.
Yeah, I'm a baby. just finished the first half century. But no, I was born in New York, lived most of my life up until about 5 years ago in the New York, New Jersey area.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Rutgers, graduated with a degree in electrical engineering.
Huh.
Went into corporate America, as most good people do. And after 8 years, I did a week with 85 inner city kids in Colorado. And that experience as a volunteer changed the trajectory of my career.
What year was that?
That was in 1993.
Huh.
And I spent a week with these kids. And at the last day, I was standing in this hallway, entering this large gymnasium where the kids were just totally engaged with each other. And I'm standing there. It was pretty cold. I can remember the feeling. I could see my breath. I could smell the wood-burning fireplaces. We're in Aspen, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I kind of started thinking. I saw these kids. They were so engaged. They were having a great time. And I was there. I was like 29 years old, working for the number one company in the world. I was working for the General Electric Company.
Doing engineering type work?
I was actually a sales engineer. Mm-hmm. I was a regional manager for 9 distributors on the East Coast.
Hmm.
And I had the right degree. I grew up in the right neighborhoods, went to the right school. And I was empty. I was spending my time going to work every day.
You had an epiphany.
I had an epiphany. And I realized that life was more than just going to work every day. I spent all my time on the side volunteering to feel good about my life when mm-hmm. I was working every day just to make money. So I got back a couple days later. After I got back, I quit my job.
Well, boy, at least you had the grit and the determination. A lot of people.
So have you been unemployed now for 23 years?
I have been unemployed. I haven't had a job since April 15th of 1993.
And enjoyed every minute of it.
I have had an amazing opportunity. I mean, we've literally just since that time, have had some amazing opportunities to travel the world.
Isn't that
to
something?
See some amazing things.
Well, at least you had the guts to make a change because you knew where you were. You weren't happy where you were, and you found something more fulfilling. And so many people, Richard, don't they get stuck in some high-powered careers that they get
Yeah, they get stuck in a career. They do that for their whole life. Then they retire. Then they die.
They get burned. Yeah. And they get burned out. A lot of them, don't need
It's just the American dream, folks.
Yeah. It is.
But Larry, before we get to the book, you just not too recently finished a rather lengthy trip, didn't you?
Yeah, we've taken two massive trips in the last 3 years. Back in 2012, we spent a month in Africa, in Uganda and Kenya, bringing computers to rural villages.
Hmm.
That kind of totally changed the trajectory of my life again. And then in January of this year, we took our kids out of school. They're 15 and 13. And we traveled for a semester. So our kids were homeschooled. And we spent 7 weeks in Australia. Then we spent a few days in Dubai. And then we spent 3.5 months traveling around Europe, and we got them to experience things that most kids their age would never experience.
Have your kids been homeschooled all through their grades?
No, not at all. And so social, they have no desire to be homeschooled anymore. But it was great for one semester.
Well, I think if you can balance that well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with home. I mean, all these kids that are winning the spelling bees every year are homeschooled. So if they're fine, I don't, you know, we should do a show on that, Richard. We will someday.
You know, one of my three kids, my middle child, my older daughter, Mia, was homeschooled from sixth grade through when she graduated high school a year early at the age of 16.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's different. I mean, our kids like the environment of school. My daughter's 15 years old now and doing speech and debate and doing, I'd love her to become a speaker. She's just very passionate and very insightful. But it was a great experience. She spent her 15th birthday at the Vatican.
Mm. Really?
And if you ever get to that area of the world, the gelato in Italy was probably the highlight of the entire trip.
Yeah.
And there was a place outside the Vatican called Old Bridge that was just the best gelato I've ever had in my life.
My niece, by the way, Richard, worked in the Vatican for one summer with the prior pope, and now I think she's in the Archdiocese of Chicago working for the Vatican there. So.
Cool. In the spirit of full disclosure, I have a cousin who is a nun in Switzerland.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Oh, the hills are alive.
So was it hard for your kids, Larry, to disconnect from their social network for that long?
That is a really good question, because my daughter's first speech and debate was all about her trip.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing she said is her first 2 weeks, she was in Instagram depression, watching all of her friends go to formal and do all this stuff. And until she became present and started enjoying where she was versus worrying about where she wasn't, that was a really interesting experience. For me, I'd shut down a business after 19 years and didn't plan on it. We planned the trip for about a year. And when I started the trip planning, I was running a very successful business with a partner in New York.
Was that consulting also, or what was that?
Yeah, we were doing coaching and peer group work for companies that resold technology in the IT industry. And I had a business partner that we had been together for a very long time. We had a really good team. And I got to the point where 80% of my clients cared about one thing, which was making more money for themselves. And my business partner and a couple of my top resources were very money motivated. And I got to a point, especially after I got back from Africa, where money was no longer my motivator at all. Mm. Now, I like nice things, and don't get me wrong, I love living in San Diego and I need to make a living. But I've decided I'd rather make a living by helping people make the world a better place than just creating a better financial reward for themselves.
Boy, that's a win-win right there, huh, Richard? That's great.
Yeah, well, you know, we've talked about similar, Sherry Harrison's Doing Good model, very similar. But, you know, you make an interesting point. I think a lot of kids and adults are disconnected because of technology. They simply aren't present.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that the truth? I mean...
the TEDx talk I did at SDSU was titled The Disconnected Connected World, which is all about, I think, the more connected we become technologically, the more emotionally and spiritually disconnected we become. And that's what I learned when I was in Africa. If there was any one big takeaway, everybody asked me, traveled a lot of places, been to Central America, been to Asia, been to most of the continents. And the question people ask is, what is the difference in those cultures? And the book that I wrote, Success Redefined, is all about what I've learned. Somebody asked me before, do you think you know a lot? I learned one really important lesson for me. Mm-hmm. And that lesson is pretty fundamental, that Maslow and his creation of the hierarchy of needs created his foundation as survival, food, water, and shelter. My contention is when I went to Africa that those people that I met were so connected to each other. They were so intimately connected as human beings that my instinct told me they were connected around this thing called survival. Mm-hmm. And I believe that Maslow knew that survival was not only our greatest human instinct as an animal on this planet, it's also our greatest human purpose. So if you think about that, if survival is a purpose, then the foundation of Maslow's hierarchy is actually purpose. Master's survival. And for the first time, 75 years after Maslow created his hierarchy of needs, you have this time in history where a huge percentage of our population is beyond survival. Mm-hmm. So they no longer have an instinctive purpose. And the only place that purpose really shows up again on Maslow's hierarchy, where he says it's an aspirational need, is our own purpose. And my contention is the reason that we need to find our own purpose is not for the sake of purpose. It's to go find others that have shared common purpose. Mm. And that's what I found in Africa, and that's what I've come back and said. I want to build that in my life. I want to build that in every aspect of my life, from my friends, my work experience, everything. And I'm not going to make my money in one place to go do good someplace else. I'm an entrepreneur. I've been able to reinvent myself before. Why not just reinvent myself in a way that says everything I do is with those that have shared common purpose?
Boy, that's profound, and that's as a greatest statement as I've heard from any guest, huh, Richard? Hey, we're going to come right back. We'll take a little break.
But it's all in the book, which we're going to talk about when
we
come back.
Yeah, we'll be back with Larry Kesslen right after these announcements. Hang on. All right, we are back getting smart with Larry Kesslen, entrepreneur, coach, consultant, and all that good stuff. Love that song, Richard, don't you?
Well, I'm a huge Get Smart fan.
Well, Larry, you're going to continue enlightening us. You left off with a really nice statement about purpose.
But Larry, I'm curious, when did the book start formulating in your mind?
I started the book back in 2009, 2008, okay. Under the title When Wants Become Needs.
Mm.
Okay. And the whole concept was, as a culture, I believe that we've confused wants for needs.
Mm-hmm.
And that when I say I need a bigger house, I need a better job, I need a smarter kid, I need a prettier wife, whatever I say I need, then your happiness, I believe, is dependent on getting your needs met.
Mm.
And then I got asked to do a TEDx talk at SDSU, and I said, I'm going to do this thing around wants versus needs. And I started writing multiple versions of this speech. I hired a speech coach, and I came to the conclusion that it wasn't around wants or needs at all. It was deeper than that. Mm-hmm. And I tied it to my experience in Africa about purpose. And it was, at the end of the day, it wasn't even about purpose. It was about connection.
Community, right?
It's about shared purpose and community and finding others that you want to spend time with. As a culture, I believe that we have been taught to connect intellectually and that we've been taught to monetize our skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want people to understand is that we can connect emotionally and spiritually, and that's a lot easier when you have purpose in your life, and that we should learn to monetize our reason for being versus monetizing our skill sets.
Mm-hmm. Which you know, I've always been a little bit, the term social media.
Sure.
You know, you're meeting all these, and we all have friends on Facebook that we've never met. So to call them friends, I don't know. But I mean, to me, it's a cyber meeting place. But I think what you're talking about, I mean, you have to do things in groups or, you know, to really get the which is why I guess churches are so popular. I just saw on the news today, the Rock Church just, you know, built another facility. People need that human bonding, because you're right. We do have adequate food, shelter, and clothing, you know, so we're going to survive. And matter of fact, we may be surviving too long with all the miracles of medicine today. But, you know, really, you know, there's another newscaster in town. She reached out to the community to donate blankets and some things for the homeless, and it turned out to be a great success. I mean, those things are fulfilling, right? I mean, there's no money in it for her, but, you know, it's just great to hear something like that going on.
It's all amazing stuff when you realize that we are here to be part of something greater than ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole idea of success redefined, my original definition of success, which I created in 1992 before I left GE, was the ability to do what I want whenever I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So entrepreneurship was the obvious journey for me to have the freedom to live my life. But I've evolved my definition. When I got back from Africa, I kind of stood in JFK Airport, and I kind of said to myself, I'm done with success. My definition of success, I'm complete. I've finished my definition, and it's time to be significant.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you 3 years later that I've realized that success without significance isn't really success at all.
Mm-hmm.
So my definition of success now, my redefined piece from my perspective, is to be part of something greater than myself. So the ability to do what I want whenever I want to do it while being part of something greater than myself is my new definition for success. And your point before about connection, there's this chapter in the book called The Connectedness Continuum, which I believe addresses the fact that as a culture, we connect at five different levels. And there's an image in there. The outer level is what I call surface-based connection. So that is Facebook friends or LinkedIn connections. Mm-hmm. Not people you really know. Inside of that, that's the page right there, is community-based connections. Are people that are interested in things that you're interested in. Mm-hmm. So that's where sports fans live. You're a Padres fan. You're a Chargers fan.
Yeah, we're in this town. We're all united in our suffering.
Yes. But you connect at that level. And it's a group of people that have a shared interest. Mm-hmm. Inside of that is a relationship-based connection, which is to another human being, one-to-one. And that's the third level. Inside of that is a relationship to yourself, which as a culture, I don't think we do self very well. But the better you are understanding yourself, the better you are in relationship, and the better you are in the community. But inside of self is our true reason for being. And I want to take religion out of it for a second. And I say some people's cause is their religion. But I think for all of us, we all have a unique reason for being here. And for me, my journey is to figure out what that is. And I think the closer you are to your purpose, your true purpose, and the more you meet others that have shared purpose that is their true purpose, I think that's where the deepest connections come.
But what if someone just wants to be an artist or raise orchids and have very little connection? I mean, everyone has a varying degree of how connected they need or how big their social circle needs to be. Emily Dickinson could sit in an attic and write great books. I mean, who am I to say, you know, that that's not a fulfilling life if she's getting, right?
I mean, I've had this question. I've asked this question. I said, what percent? I want to do a survey. I probably would love to find a research company that said, if you walked up to people, I believe that they need to be connected to one of three or four things. They need to be connected to another human being, or they need to be connected to their music, their art, or to the earth. I think there are people that they need connection, but that connection needs to be tied to their purpose. Mm-hmm. I think that we separate purpose from connection, and together, so the writer that I worked with on the book, she said, connection and purpose is like hydrogen and oxygen. Mm-hmm. Together, they're really important elements individually, but they're not water. Mm-hmm. And to me, purpose plus connection equals joy. Mm-hmm. And that's what joy is to me, is when you spend time with others that have shared common purpose.
So Larry, question.
Sure.
You and I reside in the same high school district. My kids are already out. Yours are still in.
Yes.
There's sort of this social pressure to have kids take the right courses so they can go to the right colleges, so they can have the right careers in our community. How do you get this message down to younger people? Because I think we're sending a lot of people in directions where ultimately they're not going to feel fulfilled. Just my personal opinion, even though they might be wealthy.
What do you think of this?
What do you think?
Just the whole volunteer for a variety of causes and things, right?
Outside. Well, I'll give you two cases. So first of all, my daughter's answer when you ask her what she wants to be when she grows up, her answer is to be happy.
Right.
So we're beyond that conversation of what are you going to be when you grow up.
Right, but I'm saying there's many kids who wouldn't answer that question.
To that exact point, I read something the other day that said you shouldn't ask kids what do you want to be. You should say what problems do you want to solve?
Cool.
And then
Better questions get better answers.
Yeah.
But to your point, I think that kids today, that's why we pulled them out of the school system for us. I mean, I wanted to get them out for a year. We ended up doing it for 6 months. And to me, it was an opportunity. At 15 and 13, my kids don't know much, and their friends know less.
Right.
So they're spending all their time and all their influences with people that are unaware, but they're growing. They're learning what they're supposed to learn. And I had 6 months of uninterrupted time with our kids to plant really important seeds.
So what grades were they in when they made these trips?
They were second half of 7th grade and second half of 9th grade.
Boy, I wish I took a year off in 7th grade. Did you get any
So do your teachers, Joe.
No, that was high school, Richard. Okay. But that's another show.
The teachers? We actually had to change a whole long story, but it worked out really, really well. Mm-hmm. The kids have adjusted amazingly well. My 13-year-old son wished he was home. He just wanted to play sports and be with his friends.
Oh, that's cool.
We saw some amazing stuff.
Yeah, what a cool experience. I think
it's
priceless. Those kids will remember that their whole lives.
Yeah, they will. My daughter changed her life.
Your book debuted on what date?
November 13th was the first date it was available.
It's about a month and a half ago. Okay.
Yeah. And it's available on Amazon. And it's a story. It's a 2-hour read that everybody who's read it says, Larry, it made me think. Mm-hmm. And that's all I want it to do, is to make you think about why do you do what you do every day? Why do you wake up in the morning? What is your reason for being? And if you actually thought about it, if you're successful, so I'll give you the epiphany that kind of put me on this trajectory a year and a half ago, and this is how my book got titled the book it is today. I was in Nicaragua twice. Right after I did my TEDx talk last January, I went to do a project with these social entrepreneurs, and the guy who founded the organization in Nicaragua also had a for-profit business, and he invited me back down in June to do a workshop for a dozen really successful entrepreneurs. And at the end of that two-day workshop, I'm standing with these guys, and they all looked at each other, and they were like, oh, my God, we need to change our country. And in that moment, I looked at them all, and I said, oh, my God, thank you. And they said, thank you for what? I said, thank you. I've spent the last 7 years trying to help unsuccessful, socially-minded people be successful. And what I really need to be doing is helping people that are successful be more socially-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's Success Redefined, is I want to help people that know how to get stuff done do stuff that matters or that creates a world better than the one we live in today.
Boy, Larry, that is really, really great. We're going to come up on our break right now, but Larry Kesslen, author of Success Redefined at successredefined.com, also his website's under his name, but thanks so much for being here. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
Gratitude is good, folks.